coming in, but I think we'll kick off. Let me first of all introduce myself. My name's Andy Roby. I've been here at St. Mary's for far too many years, and I coordinate a group here called Men's Group, the St. Mary's Men's Group. It's unashamedly about men, and why we have women here tonight is still slightly perplexing. But I welcome you very much, because what the interesting story about all this is that I got a phone call, I think, first of all, from Colin Ashby about this event, because we advertised it across the churches in Watford. And Colin said, there's a group called Last Friday that is looking for men. It's short of men. It's basically a group to get men and women, Christian men and women together. And this is just the sort of thing that we've been thinking about, winning men. There are not enough men in the church. And that's the issue that we've invited Carl Beach to come and speak to us about. We've been working in St. Mary's on men's issues, I suppose, for about 10 years. Started by a curate who came to the church and found that the men were not talking to each other, which was pretty grim. The women had all their groups, their clubs, then, and kids and all sorts of things, and the men weren't doing very much at all. And so he just started a social group that met every month at somebody's house, and it grew and it grew and it grew. And we've now got about 60 people in the group, and we do all sorts of things. And I'm happy to share that with you at a later stage. But that's enough about us and St. Mary's. Let me introduce Carl. Carl, as he told me earlier, is an engineer by training. But first and foremost, he's an Essex boy. And I'm sure we'll hear more of that later. And he likes motorbikes, which puts him very firmly in my camp. But latterly, the last 12 years, I think, been in ministry, planting churches, and in the last couple of years, working for the Christian Vision for Men, as it's now called. Without any further ado, I'll hand over to Carl. You can introduce the evening. It's your evening. It's our evening. Let's make the most of Carl's presence. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, well, evening, everyone. Cool. Okay, if you're sitting outside of these three rows, you're going to miss out on my goodie pack, unless you've nicked some. You got some? So I'm going to be talking through some of this stuff in a minute, so make sure you get one of these at the end. It's a free pack of magazines, very generously. What we're going to do for the next, I'm going to try and contain it to 45 minutes, is a couple of things. I'm going to attempt something that I've not done before, and that's to blend two different presentations together. When initially Andy and I spoke together, I was going to come to a presentation called Winning Men, which is basically a strategy for building relationships, men building relationships with other men, and drawing them close to Jesus, introducing them into the kingdom. That was the first thing we were going to do. But then as we got talking, as the invitation extended, and some of the women were coming along as well, I thought, well, actually, another presentation that we often do is called Gearing Church Up for Men, which is challenging the whole culture of church and talking about why church is such a massive turn-off often for blokes. So what I'm going to do is do a bit of both. Now, I haven't done that before, so that could be a complete disaster. So if it is, just grab another cup of wine or something and a few snacks, and we'll just plow on through. I'm going to have some questions and answers after, but if I'm saying something and it really gets up your nostrils and you want to massively disagree with me, that's fine, because it makes the evening so much better. I won't be offended by that at all. So if there's something burning you just want to get clarity on, just interrupt me as we go along, okay? So this is going to run through for about 45, 50 minutes. So my challenge now is to just keep you kind of fully engaged with it. But this is my family. Just a brief bit of testimony. I'm 35 now. I know, in fact, that's an old photo because I accidentally recently deleted the most recent one. But my kids are now 8 and 6. They're a bit bigger than that now. But anyway, I've been married to Karen for 13 years, became a Christian when I was 18. I come from solid Essex working class roots. My dad was a flying squad detective. He was like one of the original members of the Sweeney. My mum was a dressmaker, then stopped working when she had children. I had nothing to do with church. I had a very unspiritual upbringing, if I could put it like that. It was nothing to do with churchmanship at all. I only went to church because I fancied a girl who was going to the church, and I ended up marrying her. It was like a big cosmic ambush, actually. It's a big cosmic setup. And preceding that, there was a mate of mine I found out was what was described as a born-again Christian, which to me was like Cliff Richard. So it was a massive opportunity for a Mickey take. And out of that, he one day pinned me, he got me by the neck, actually, and he swore at me, which I thought was a bit off. And he said, "You just shut your noise up and come to church with me or you're a chicken," which is a very clever evangelistic strategy for a bloke, isn't it? So I went along, and to cut a very long story short, because I haven't got time for that tonight, I met Jesus in a service, in a brethren church, very traditional church. Everyone looked very unhappy to be in the church. I couldn't understand why people went. I was only going because I fancied this girl. And in a service one time, this guy was speaking, and Jesus just grabbed hold of me. And I remember walking out of the church, and it was on the main road. I grew up in Hornchurch in Montford. I came out onto this main road, and I saw a tree the other side of the road, and just thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen in my life. I just stood there crying. I couldn't get over it. And I say to people, it was as if I was leading a black and white life, and suddenly I was leading a technicolour life. You know, I remember standing there, 18, an Essex kid, standing on this main road, thinking, "So that's what leaves look like. They're beautiful." You know, I just stand there crying. And after lots of ups and downs and lots of shenanigans, the Lord has kept hold of me. And after a few years flogging insurance, which is a classic Essex occupation, I walked out of the bank one day. With no promise of an income or any set job to establish a new church on the council estate. And my new wife and I, Karen and I, we sold our house and moved onto the estate and established a church amongst quite a violent and quite a despairing culture, really. And we saw the glory of God come in that. And after a few years of doing that, dealing with a lot of addicts and domestic violence situations, a lot of a criminal fraternity in that particular area. It was quite a cut and thrusting sort of ministry. Nearly broke me, actually. Tough time. But after that, did some youth work for a year. And after that, became senior pastor of the church in Billericay, which grew from 200 to 600 very rapidly. And I'm saying that not to as an ego boost, but the factual reason, the reason it grew, was that we tapped into men. And the men brought their families very quickly. And the reason I left my church to do this was a burning passion to see men run into the kingdom. Because I think they're actually the key, one of the keys to seeing God turn this nation around. If we can see the men switched on, I think we can see the nation turn around. And that's why I left what was a very nice, comfortable ministry, actually, to go and work with CVM. So that's me. Passionate about motorbikes, and I've just had to sell my motorbike, which is a bit of a grieving for that at the moment, actually. So I'm cycling from Land's End to John O'Groats in 9 days in July. If you want to sponsor me, it's for a kids' charity working in Africa. But I've lost a stone so far, and it's coming off fast. So this time next year, I'll be a shadow of my former self. And I did a lot of work in India and Bangladesh too, a lot of Bible training and stuff. So that's me. That's my background and who I am talking to you. I work for this organisation called Christian Vision for Men, and we have a very basic vision statement, and that's to equip the church to introduce every single man in the UK to Jesus Christ. Yeah. Right, there's only 14 of us on staff, and there's 26 million men, so we're a bit snowed under, which is why I travel across the country talking to people in churches, because our passion is that we've got to see local churches switched on to winning local men, or we're just not going to do it. So we are a training and a catalyst organisation. We don't sell anything. We don't go around asking for money. We are simply trying to fire up and stir up the church and put the right tools in our hands to get the job done. So we'll talk to anyone who is passionate, men, women, children and their pets. Anyone who's interested, we'll talk to, because we're in a serious problem at the moment in terms of men and church attendance. You've all got these packs. One magazine, they're reversible. So you've got two magazines in there very quickly. This magazine is an outreach tool that we produce called Motor, as you can see. It's basically a contemporary version of a tract. You know, it's designed to look like GQ or FHM, that kind of thing. So it's very user-friendly. It's packed full of the gospel. There's some fun stuff in there as well, factoids and gadget articles and stuff like that. But it's all Christ-centered. So the idea is that a bloke can leave that in his briefcase, his rucksack, leave it in a barber's, leave it in the pub. You know, wives give it to their husbands who aren't their believers. You know, whatever. You know, you just drop it anywhere. It's an easy way to do evangelism. We've designed it to be cringe-free, but I hope you agree it looks like a high-quality publication. We put a lot of effort into that. We'll put this into the hands of anyone who wants one. If you want to give us a donation for it, you can, but to be honest, you'd just rather get them out there. Okay? So we don't sell it, we just give it away. And then Reach is a newsletter. We act as a network hub working with churches across the UK, and that just shares lots of ideas and resources and highlights other ministries who are trying to do good stuff out there. One of our principles is that there's no copyright in the kingdom. So if we hear of something good going on somewhere, we'll share it with other people and be very open-handed with it. We've got all kinds of resources and stuff on our website, for instance, which you can just download and use. So you want to just share all the good things that God is doing out there. So have a good read of those and see what you think. And we'll take any feedback you've got. So we work across the UK. We're supporting at the moment something like 300 men's groups, but to put that in context, that represents about 900 churches, I think, at the moment, because we're seeing a lot of churches work together across towns to try and pull together to win men. And we're also in the business of providing all these sorts of materials. We do lots of teaching and training on stuff like any male issue, really, from pornography to work, ego, ambition, anything really. We're producing lots of Bible-based resources. Just about to have a book published for Scripture Union that's got 52 Bible studies in it for men. They're 52 character studies of men in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, written in Jeremy Clarkson style. So, that, you know, it makes the Bible accessible for men. So we're constantly working hard just to churn this kind of stuff out all the time. We put on events like this. We do regional conferences. We've got a number of regional conferences happening through the year and a main annual conference. We'll just do whatever you need, really, to get the job done. So if you come to us and say, how about doing this, we'll either find a ministry that's already doing it and point you in their direction, or we'll do it if no one else is. We're just passionate about getting stuff out there, really. It's just money that stops us and resources, really. Stuff. That was last year's annual conference. We take 400, this is this year's, we take 400 guys away on an annual conference to a four-star hotel and give them a bonds of time, basically. We give them good food, golf driving range, gym, all the stuff, and good speakers, hopefully, and good seminars on life and evangelism. It's just good to stand shoulder to shoulder with 400 other guys who are all going through life struggles and just be with them, really, and spend time praying together. And it's a really good time. So, guys, if you're interested in getting along, book in quick, because places do get snapped up very, very quickly. In 2008, we're hoping to get the Black Prince cruise liner out of Liverpool. Take the guys on a cruise to St. Malo or to Dublin or something. So watch this space. We're working on closing the deal right now. So it's good stuff. This is work-based website, gg2w.org.uk. As I said, we act as a network hub. So we're networking all the professional sectors of Christian fellowships across the UK. Town Centre Midweek Fellowship. So if you're a lawyer, we'll plug you into people. If you're an accountant working in Kettering, we'll plug you into some Christians near you and stuff like that. Because one of the major mission areas is work. We do a whole presentation on that, so I'm not going to dwell on it tonight. But just to highlight one of our other free resources, on the website, GG2W, you'll find Bible studies we've written on all of these sorts of areas. Just to show men that the Bible's got something to say about their work in life. Because most men will come to church for years and never hear anything about their work. And if we do anything about work, what we tend to pray for are the caring professions. So teachers and nurses and stuff. I'm not criticising that, but when did we last hear prayer for a van driver or a train driver who's facing the threat of suicide attempts or dealing with trauma? No, we don't tend to do that. Or mechanics or shop workers. So what we've done is produce Bible studies that just, I know women are at work as well, but for men it can be a point of high significance in their lives. They put a huge amount of value in their work. My wife works, but somehow she's just able to just drop that and switch out of it very, very quickly. I seem to put a lot of significance in my work, you know. And so for men, unless we're tapping into that, particularly with evangelism, we're missing a huge area. So have a look at that, and if you think we're not done something particularly well, well, feel free to adapt it and edit it and send it in to us. We reserve the right to check it for biblical compliance, and if you've done a good job, we'll publish it. Okay? Simple as that. We're very unprecious. Challenges facing us in evangelism to men today. Well, we did a survey on BBC Edinburgh. One of my colleagues was being interviewed up there. And at the same time as him being interviewed about men and spirituality, they sent a reviewer out onto an interviewer out onto the streets and interviewed 50 Scotsmen and said to them, what's the first thing that comes into your mind when we say church? And these were the answers that came back. Top three words. Church is for wimps. Church is for women. Church is irrelevant to my life. Now, there is a huge gap in understanding. You know, from where people outside regular church attendance are to where we think they might be. Massive, massive gap. There's 44 million Christians in the UK. Do you believe that? Well, I don't. Actually, it's mainly because when they gather the census data, you know, if you go to hospital, for instance, and you chop the top of your finger off and they say, what religion are you? And they gather the statistics. Most people in the UK still say, I'm CVO, I'm Catholic. So 44 million people still claim themselves to be Christians in the UK, but 6 million are attending church on a regular basis. Now, regular means once a month. So if you go to 6 funerals, 6 weddings, you'll be a regular church attender in the UK when I gather the census statistics. 38% of attenders are male. They're actually suggesting across the UK, and don't dwell on this too much because statistics are bearing in flux all the time, but actually a regular weekly core of committed believing men is as low as 700,000 UK men on a weekly basis. Have a population of 26 million guys. That's not too good. There was a 49% decline of believing men aged under 30, between 20 and 30. That's believing men, men sitting in church saying, I'm just not going to go anymore, and voting with their feet and walking out. Nearly half our number. And it's not really getting any better. The 32% decline was across the age ranges. Now that's believing men before we even start to think about getting men into the kingdom and introducing them to Jesus. We're hemorrhaging men at an alarming rate of knots. As our highly accurate statistical graph represents to you, that actually by the year 2030, they're saying there'll be zero men left in the UK church. And Christian researchers link that to the death of the church in 2040, the effective death of the church in the UK by 2040. Now, I don't believe that in 23 years' time there'll be no men left in the church. It's almost hard to imagine. I believe that Jesus is Lord, for one thing, so I don't think that's going to happen. But it does say to me that the rate of decline is so terminal that we've got to do something fast and start to act with a bit more urgency and a little bit more passion. I drive across the UK for a living doing this kind of thing, and I see huge wastelands, spiritual wastelands across the UK. Churches being boarded up all over the country. In the north of the country, parts of it are spiritually desolate, and it's starting to happen around here too. This is interesting too. When I was a pastor for 12 years pastoring churches, people would often say to me, you know, Carl, what you really need? You need a really good children's work and a really good youth work. You've really got to establish that. If you win the children, we win the families. You heard that kind of language? You must have done. It's sort of been said a lot. But actually, statistically, and CVM haven't made this up to strengthen our case, statistically, if you win a child to Jesus, 3.5% of families will convert holistically to Jesus Christ. If you lead a mother to Jesus, 17% of families will follow to Jesus. If you win a father to Jesus, 93% of families follow. Now, I've seen this borne out in my local church. I had women sitting on their own, painfully sitting on their own in church, without their husbands coming. For years, years, they would sit there, and their kids would pull against them too, because they wanted to be where their dads were and stuff like that. There's often conflict coming into the family. When we realised the imperatives to reach men, you know, we changed things to draw men into the kingdom. And we found that when a man gave his life to Jesus, the family was there within a fortnight. I mean, we were seeing holistic conversion. And it was one of the reasons why our church grew. Now, you could argue all kinds of reasons as to why that is. You might even want to debate whether that's right or wrong. I'm just being pragmatic and giving you the empirical data. That's what happens. I've found for myself, I've got two daughters, and one of them particularly is just massively into the girly stuff. You know, she's always making me watch chick flicks and play little bits of makeup and stuff like that. But even when I'm tinkering with my new bicycle or when I was in the garage of my motorbike, I'd often turn around and she'd be standing there looking at me because she just wanted to be where I was. So if I say to my daughters, hey, on Sunday we're going to go fishing, that's where they want to be. But if I say as a family we're going to church, that's where they want to be. In the UK today, on average, it takes a man 5 years to come to Christ from the point of first hearing the gospel. 5 years, on average. After hearing the gospel, 30 times. You think about that. 30 years ago, he could probably tell someone about Jesus once at a Billy Graham rally and they might come forward. Now, statistically, it's taking 5 years, 30 times hearing the gospel. And 80% of men who give their life to Jesus were bought by a friend. However, most of the men who have given their life to Jesus through friendships were bought by women, not by men. And we're still facing this terminal decline. It's very powerful when a man starts to tell his mates about Jesus, though. What it simply says to me is that you need a strategy that works over the long term, that keeps putting Jesus in front of people, that's based on authentic, genuine friendship, not forming friendships because someone's a target, but genuine friendship. The other issue is that 95% of men are tongue-tied. J. John says that men are like Arctic rivers, they're frozen at the mouth. You know, and I think it's probably true. You know, we're not very good at, you know, very rarely are any of us very good as men at walking up to someone and sharing the love of God in our lives. Now, I, for one, I'm a speaker for a living, but I'm painfully shy when it comes to small talk. Now, I'm rubbish, actually. Now, in social gatherings where you've got to stand around with a glass of wine and a vol-au-vent if it's in church or a bit of quiche, you know, I'm just paralysed to know what to say, actually, unless I've got an agenda or a task or something to talk about. So what we don't do is individual faith-sharing training on evenings like this. What we concentrate on is the stuff attached into male psychology, which is to use a band of brothers approach. Because men love brotherhood. They love authentic friendship. They love to be shoulder to shoulder with other men. So if you create that right environment in the church, it's a very easy environment then for men to draw other men in. And just as a point of confession, these are all pretty much statistically accurate, but I made the last one up to strengthen my case. Okay, just being honest with you. Okay. But one thing I would say, before we do anything else, which is going to be massively practical, and we're going to whiz through some stuff, and we're going to chuck loads of things out at you. If you're making notes, one thing I can do is just give you our presentation. Okay, so I'm probably going to go fast, just to keep you all awake. But if you want our presentations, you can have any of them. Okay, just speak well of us when you show people them or you're going to use them yourself, okay? That's all. But I don't know if any of you saw the film Deep Impact. They had something called Codename Ellie, which is an extinction level event. And what we're basically saying is that by 2030, unless we do something, we're facing the extinction of men from the UK church. Now, all the stuff that we're going to go on to do next, all the practical stuff, you know, is not going to win a man to Jesus. Actually, what we desperately need across the UK are men and women turning back to prayer, first and foremost. And we need to be back on our knees for our friends and our family members and our brothers. That's what we really desperately need. And for me, I've drawn a lot of inspiration in this ministry from the book of Nehemiah. And I'm not going to do a big Bible study with you, but I just want to highlight this. So I think this is really important that you hear this from my heart before I do lots of nuts and bolts stuff with you. And Nehemiah, when word comes to him that the walls of Jerusalem are broken down, the first thing he did wasn't draw up an action plan or a mission statement or a strategy for rebuilding the walls. Actually, it says in the Word of God in Nehemiah chapter 1 that when word came to Nehemiah that the walls had broken down, he got on his knees with a broken heart and he wept. And he prayed. And he mourned. And he fasted. And it was only after that did he go to King Artaxerxes and ask for permission to go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls. And it was only then that the favour of God was upon him, the king, granted the permission. Nehemiah goes to the walls and they are so devastated, these walls are the size of the stones are the size of men. You know, these are huge stones. It's nearly an impossible act to rebuild them. And he goes in through the valley gate because it's the only place he can get in because of the rubble. Goes around the perimeter and has to come out the same place. The devastation's so big. But basically, to cut a long story short, by chapter 3, he's starting to do it. And it's all hands on deck. Everyone's got a job. He's got perfume makers rebuilding the wall. Now, he's got soldiers with trowels in one hand and spears in the other. Everyone is getting stuck in. And by chapter 6, they've done it. And it only took 52 days. Now that is a miracle, actually, but we missed the miracle. But that's a miracle of rebuilding. It's a miracle of prayer and action working together. So everything I'm going to share with you next, great. But unless we fuel it with prayer and a genuine passion in our heart for our friends and families who are facing the potential of a lost eternity, you know, I don't think we're going to get anywhere. And I think that has to come first. That is a pyramid, just in case you haven't got it. And you might not think that's very amusing, but it illustrates for me a point when I saw that cartoon for the first time. And that is this. If the guys in Watford uncovered their bit, and the guys in Glasgow did their bit, and the guys in Harold Wood did their bit, and the guys in Bletchley did their bit, and the guys in Truro did their bit, and everyone got all hands on deck across the country, and we actually saw a movement of men stir up again in this country, then I think we would do the job. Then I think it would happen. And I was so encouraged the other week when I was speaking at a conference and one of the other speakers said, oh, CVM, I've heard of that movement. I think that's it. We don't want to be an organisation. We want to be a catalyst for a new movement of men turning back to God. Now, people are getting passionate about it again, men being brothers across this country. So if, you know, I don't care whether there's 100 people here tonight, 1,000 or 20, to me, if we've got the right people here and we get stirred up to action, then I think we're starting to see stuff happen all across the UK. We've just got to keep pressing on. So we have a four-level strategy when it comes to evangelism, some of which is already going on in this church. So I'm going to reinforce some of what you're doing, but I might just give some new insights that we've picked up across the years, both my colleagues and I, as we've gone along and listened across the country to what people are doing successfully. Level one is basically making friendships. Easy. Level two is mentioning Jesus in conversation. Even easier for some, not for others. Number three is telling them shed loads more once you've got permission. And level four is seeing them become committed Christians into a man-friendly church. Ta-da! Sorted? Thanks for coming tonight. You've been ever so good listening to me. Okay, so level one is zero Christian content other than the conduct of your life. Okay? And it's all about just getting alongside other blokes. So we've got a whole host of stuff up here, loads of different suggestions. You know, a little church down the road from me where I live in sleepy Somerset, they put on all the football matches, and they got a keg of real ale, and they gave everyone who came a free pint. Packed the church out. Unsurprising. Quad bikes. Blokes love getting their power tools out. This is a profound mystery to many women. But you just got to go with it. I mean, I buy power tools. I don't even know why I bought them. I just like them. The other day, we were having an office reorganisation. We were all in the office going, I don't know what we were doing half the time, but we did like our power tools. Give a bloke a job, give him a power tool, and he's happy as anything. You'll get side by side him. Ploughing, sea pigeon trip, clay pigeon, four-wheel drive, going ape. Loads of stuff. Walks, bike rides, wire games, dads and lads or dads and lads and daughters, ultimate frisbee, always wondered what happened next. There's so many different things that you can do. But whilst this might sound simplistic to you, actually what this is doing is tapping into the way that men behave and think. See, men like to be side by side other men. Look at the way the men talked as opposed to the women when you came in tonight. The men fold their arms or hide their hands and they look over their shoulder to talk. Even when we're facing each other to talk, we'll be sometimes, very often actually, slightly side on. What men do is they scratch and sniff around each other, working out each other's position. We're working out the hierarchy of the pack. Now, I'm a typical alpha male. So when I normally talk to people, I normally just stand and look at them. And if I'm in front of another alpha male, I can recognise it immediately. Guess they'll do the same thing back. If there's a stronger alpha male in a pack, I might just fold my arms and try to talk over my shoulder. I know that rarely happens. But the side-by-side aspect of building friendships and relationships with men is so important. The women, when they came in, they were huddling around together and just talking, just relationally straight away. Completely different way of thinking. And all this can be proved scientifically as well. I haven't got time to go into that tonight. So he emphasised the side-by-side thing. As a pastor, when a man came to me with an issue or need, I didn't sit him down in my study opposite me. Because for a man, that is a nightmare. I'd say, come and let me walk the dog. Walk the dog with me. So I'd take my Alsatian out for a walk with the bloke. The Alsatian would intimidate him into telling me everything. But I found that after... She's a wimp, my dog. After a while, I'd find that we'd been walking a mile or so over the country park or whatever, and as we came to the last half a mile, they'd start to talk. Because the men felt safe. One of the early initiatives when I first went to my church for a men's outreach that was already in existence was a men's breakfast. And that was the only outreach initiative in the church, the men's breakfast. Except it was a porridge and compote breakfast. Compote is like prunes and figs and stuff. The porridge is made by a bloke called, let's call him Dave for the benefit of the tape. The porridge is made by a bloke called Dave, who is very committed to his porridge. It's like a religious experience for him. And he'd get there at 6 o'clock in the morning to make it, this huge big vat of porridge for 50 blokes, which dwindled to 10 very rapidly. Because this porridge is like a building substance. And when you put it in a bowl, you can actually fold it and then unfold it. And people would have competitions to see how long they could leave it folded before they could unfold it again. And so what happened is that typically the blokes would be forced to sit opposite each other, which is just a nightmare, isn't it? And then you'd say, you know, how do you use your time? Which is a better question saying how you doing for what do you do for a living or what's your work, but you'll fall into that. So, you know, what do you do for work? I'm an accountant. Great. Where does terrible say, isn't it? Brilliant, yeah. Porridge. Run out of things to say. You just killed evangelism in the church. You've got to tap into the way that men think, which is to do stuff. And I'm not being ageist. There's all kinds of things you can do. We ran short mat bowls in our church for the senior citizen guys. We packed the church out. We saw numbers of them come to faith. It was a good investment buying all the equipment for them. This is something we did in Billericay and we do in Bath. It's simple. We bought 30 metres of builder's plastic, covered it in foam water and flung ourselves down it. It's as simple as that. And at the end of that day, end of that hour or two, you have a barbecue. Right? You have a barbecue. You're all covered in grass and mud and rubbish, and in some horrible occasions, dog mess. And at the end of it, you've got a level playing field. It doesn't matter whether you're a car mechanic or a lawyer. You're just a bunch of blokes having a burger covered in grass and mud and foam. Now, in fact, when I last did that in my church, I was the one who set the builder's plastic out, and I aimed it at a tree by mistake. And I was the first one down, and I hit the tree, and that's 6 months of physiotherapy. But actually, I'll be walking down the high street of my town and people would say, there's that stupid bastard who crashed into the tree. But my legendary hero figure status went through the roof. Now, it's really useful for evangelism. Because you're just a bloke having a good time. One person did say to us that you're being ageist by recommending that goal. Well, just to say that the next day on that particular occasion, a 90-year-old woman went down there. And she loved it. We never met her before. We just put her down there. But she loved it. This is something in Bath. It's the Olympic bobsleigh start track, which ends about there. You know, it's not very long. But again, you just use what's in your local area. It's the start track, not the track. So you just push it along and jump in it, and you fall over each other, and you bash your shins, and you cut your fingers. And at the end of an hour of doing that, you're exhausted, you have a pint, and you have a sandwich, and everyone's talking. And the barriers come down. And you keep doing things like that, and the barriers come down. And you form genuine friendships. Because let me tell you something else. This doesn't just tap into male psychology. It taps into male need. And that is that there's an epidemic of loneliness across this country in men. Serious epidemic of loneliness. I crave authentic friendship. I long to have brothers around me who are my mates, who just stand with me. Now, who I can just talk with and chat with. I don't want it forced upon me. I don't want to over-egg it. But I want friendship. And many men are wearing masks and they're lonely. And so it's crucial that we try and tap into that need at the moment, because if the church doesn't fulfil it, I don't see where else we might get that from. So for me, this isn't just about being ridiculous together. This is tapping into a deep, deep need across society at the moment, particularly for men. Let me say to you that when it comes to married life or relationship life, I'm finding that most men's best friends are their wives' best friends, partners or husbands. Do you follow that? They're not mates of my choosing. Now, the mate that I might see most is my wife's best friend's husband, because my wife is the relational one and she'll organise the meals and the get-togethers. And of course, so she drags her husband along, the other friend, and I've got to get on with him. You know, even though we just clash badly and I want to knock him out every time I see him. You know, I'm parodying it. You know, I've got to form that friendship and relationship. I'm forced into it. We need to create an environment where men can choose their own friends. And I tell you what, once that's starting to happen in the context of church, and you walk into church and you see your brothers there, your mates who you stand with and you share life with, that makes church a very different experience. It doesn't matter the style of worship or the style of preaching, actually it becomes about relationship. And most men attend church because of relationships, actually, or duty. And the ones that are attending out of duty tend to be the ones that fall away first. So we simply say, do what you're good at and invite a friend. If your passion's deep sea fishing, take people fishing. If it's golf, go golf. If it's walking, use it. I was talking to 120 golfers in the Christian Golf Society recently, and I just asked them, they're all believers. I said, how many of you here use golf for evangelism? I said, how many of you like golf? And they'll put their hands up laughing at me. So how many of you use it for evangelism? And every hand went down. I think, well, what? Golf is a perfect activity, isn't it? You're side by side. You're doing an activity. You're walking and talking. You get to see the heart of a man in a golf game. Yeah, it's very interesting. Why not use it? One guy came over to me afterwards and he said, Carl, I didn't want to say this in front of everyone, but we do golf for evangelism in my particular church. He said, but we've never ever had anyone come along who isn't yet a believer. And I had a flash of inspiration from the Lord and said, what do you call yourselves? He said, the Ecumenical Golf Society. Hey, it's a clue. Got to break out. That's level one. Level two is an event with a speaker. Contextualise it. When I was working on the estate, we did pie and pint, curry nights, fish and chip supper. If you're in an area where people appreciate going out for a nice meal, go to the golf club or the country club or something like that. We put on a good event, good quality food, lots of saturated fat when it comes to blokes, and then you have a really good speaker. One of the things that CVM does, we monitor now our speakers, there's nearly 200 speakers actually. So you've got guys like Noel Fellows who'll come out to you, who is a policeman who's wrongly convicted of murder, spent 7 years inside, now he's released and fully acquitted, and comes out and speaks about the nature of forgiveness. Now, he's on we manage the speakers this basically. We make sure you've got top-notch guys who are not superhero guys, not big Christian celebrities. We try and resist that. Ordinary guys have got a story to tell. He spoke for me at a breakfast recently near where I live, and 14 guys gave their lives to Jesus, where they've been putting in the relationship stuff, and then they put in the breakfast, and they kept rolling that program, and he really connected with them. But guys like Major Carl Benfield, who's been bomb disposing in Basra, he'll come out and share how his faith helped him do his job. That's a good talk for blokes. We've got a guy like squadron leader Ian Ferguson, who ejected out of a Phantom 600 miles an hour, 200 feet off the ground, and obviously lived to tell the tale. And he'll come out and share about his faith. If you think, well, that's all a bit testosterone laden, we've got guys like Trevor Stammers, who's working at the top end of government in sexual health issues. You think, well, that's not very evangelistic, but actually he's amazing. And all of these speakers will speak for a decision. They're just sowing kingdom principles and talking about their faith and how it connects in the real world, which is really important for men, because they need to know how faith makes sense of life. Here's an example of how to do it really well and how to do it really badly in one fell swoop. So, competition time. Can you see what is really good about that? Yep, there's going to be food. You've got a knife and fork. That's a good sign. Not just porridge. That's a good sign for blokes. I'll tell you, Yorkie bar. Was it sound the side of a Yorkie? Not for girls, but just for girls. Just for blokes. Not for girls, just for girls. Stop men at work. Nice touch, bit personalised. Can you spot the really bad glaring error? No, what's all that about in the middle? What's all the fluff stuff doing on the table? put a drill on it. Now, I'm being silly, but you get my point. They got the women to lay the table. You know, so a bloke comes in, he's got a nice fire up looking at flowers and fluff. You know, when we do the CVM conference, we put golf clubs on the stage instead of flowers. I mean, we're being silly, but it makes a point. What we say is do everything with utter, utter quality, because men appreciate really high quality. They really just taps into that. That's really appreciated by guys. And don't be afraid to charge for it. But the other thing is you've got to own it. I'm not honestly saying put a drill on the table, but own it and make it your event and you run it. Because men will appreciate what men like, basically. Absolutely. You've got to do it all work for your guys. I've done stuff and put all kinds of interesting things in it, even like metal puzzle things and all kinds of stuff, you know, and gadgets. And we did a hot air balloon making competition at one dinner. We put some meths on each table and some cotton wool and stuff like that. We said, don't light it inside. You've just got to plan it and we'll launch on after, you know. And guys love that. They love that kind of stuff. Just be creative and inventive. Be absolutely right. The other thing we advocate is residential evangelism. When I was running a church, we used to do a thing very simply called men's camp. And we used to get a big marquee and loads of tents, take the guys out, a man makes fire, eats bad food, and talk about Jesus in the evening. Wide games, get muddy, do, you know, the Dangerous Book for Boys that's come out, it's a big hit. We did stuff that would be in that book before that book came out, you know, making bows and arrows and being stupid and making fires from nothing. And blokes loved that. And then we talk about Jesus in the evening. Every year we did that, men would come to faith. It was a very special time. We try and model that by running a sports week in Lanzarote each year, which I run on the third week of March. And basically, it takes place in this place called Club La Santa, which is an all-inclusive when it comes to sports all-inclusive sports activity week, but not inclusive in food and drink. It's the activities. So you get top-of-the-range road bikes, mountain bikes, volcano scrambles, free windsurfing tuition. It's all thrown in. You just got to get a cheap flight out there. And eating is about £5 a night for a really good meal, because we own an apartment out there. Now, how much do you think a week like that costs? £65, sir. £65 for everything apart from your flight, which you can get for £40-50 if you go to the right places. So we basically say, get in on it. Bring a mate who is not yet a believer. That is the only condition. You'd be surprised every year we can't fill it up. Because men aren't building relationships with other men who aren't yet believers. But there's a challenge for you. It's a good week. And then you've got level three. Level three is any course. There's all kinds of courses, from Alpha to Emmaus to Christianity Explored. We're not going to dwell on this. Suffice to say that we recommend that occasionally a church runs a course just for guys. Because men will find it very difficult to share the barriers to faith that they have in front of women. It's just a fact. For instance, they're suggesting that as much as 20-30% of men in the church are chronically addicted to pornography. I've found from pastoral experience that sexual issues are a big one when men are drawing near to Jesus. That can be, you know, previous adulteries, indiscretions, bitch use of pornography, that kind of thing. It's not the only thing, but that kind of thing can be very prevalent in men who are drawing close to Jesus. And it can be a barrier to them finally deciding to commit their lives to God. They're not going to talk about it in front of Ethel, are they? But they'll talk about it in front of Dave. So just think about that. We're not saying do it all the time. We don't want to create lines of gender division. We're just saying sometimes it'd be good to have that facility. So here's how we recommend we do it. We've got a bit more stuff to go through yet. I'll try and keep it fast. It's very simple. If you slide down Builders Plastic in September, you have all the invites for Major Carl Benfield's bomb disposal talk 4 weeks later. They're all ready to go. And you say to the guys, okay, you enjoyed today, brilliant burger, nice sliding down the thing, blah, 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 great fun, ha, ha. Major Carl Benfield's coming in 4 weeks' time, do you want to come? Brilliant. Hand out all the invites. And of course, no one's going to come because you've got to phone them all up because they're guys. That thing gets in the way of their lives, they forget stuff, it's what blokes are like. So you've got, someone's got to have the job of phoning them all around. One of our groups recently got 120 men to their event, which included 60 men who weren't yet believers. And when we asked him how he did it, he said, I sent out 200 Yorkie bars. And on each Orchid Bar, to my believing friend, I put a note on it saying, if you can invite a mate who's not yet a believer, eat the Orchid Bar. If you can't, invite, give it to a man who can. Which is very creative. So you just got to drive it and push it. And then at the end of Major Carl Benfield's talk, you basically say, hey, we've got 30 places for clay pigeon shooting, who wants to come? And then you push it and you drive it. Then at the end of clay pigeon shooting, you say, we've got squadron leader Ian Ferguson coming, we're going to have a curry and a bit of a talk, do you want to come? And you do the same thing. But we're only saying do 3 level 1 activities and 3 level 2 activities a year. That's only 6 events for a year, which is much less than what people normally think we're going to say. Because you need to do some in-reach stuff in the margins, building the guys up, but also you need to maintain quality. And also you don't want to overkill men forming friendships. Because let me explain. My wife, before I moved 200 miles away from my mother-in-law, bless her, she would phone up her mum and talk for half hour on the phone, and then I'd say, what are you doing this afternoon? She'd say, going shopping with my mum. And I think, what are you going to talk about? How does that work? I mean, what are you going to do? Because I'll phone up my dad and I'll say, hi dad, how you doing? Great son. But how's your prostate? Yeah, fine. Brilliant. Yeah, thinking of your dad. Yeah, bye. Put the phone down. And I think, that'll do for 6 months. It's all right. We love each other. We're cool. You know, we might not see each other again for 6 months and we pick up exactly where we left off because we're blokes. And that's how we tick. That's what we do. You know, my wife's often saying to me, you need to work harder at your friendships. I think if I work harder at my friendships, everyone's going to think I'm nuts. Because when I bump into people, we just pick up where we left off. Because we're fine. Because we're blokes. So you just got to remember that when it comes to church culture, because somehow we come into church and we forget that. And we just drain blokes of conversation. And level 3 needs to be spontaneous. Often what a church does, it's just a suggestion. Often what a church does is say, our Alpha course is starting on the 17th of October with a meal at 7:30. And you'll mostly get women in most churches across the country. Because men won't function like that. The way men function is to say, hey Dave, yeah Rich, John, yeah, I see you getting a bit interested, so how about we all pile around to my place on Thursday, we'll get a pizza, and we'll start looking at the apostle, it's got to go to America, or actually I've got to babysit that night, and blah, 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 my wife's getting a bit funny about it, etc., etc., etc. You have to be spontaneous. In my experience of running many, many Alpha courses for men, I found that typically a 12-week course would run about 25, 26 weeks. It's just the way men are. And then level 4 is a man-friendly church, which should be happening all the time. I'm going to finish in about 5 minutes, okay? You cool? You all okay? With me so far? If you want me to stop, just throw something at me, it's okay. So level 1 is social events. Breaking down the barriers, building relationships, energising guys, defeating loneliness, yeah, getting guys shoulder to shoulder, enabling them to sniff out and work out each other's position in the pack, doing all that kind of stuff, and eating bad food, that kind of thing. Level 2, one-off outreach. Off the back of authentic friendships, because we really care about our friends, not because they're targets, we put on good quality outreach events with good quality speakers who are ordinary guys with a story to tell. And then feeding spontaneously into courses when people start to show an interest. Remember, 5 years, 30 times, it's not going to happen overnight. Sometimes it can. Like in my life, the Holy Spirit can move upon a man's life or a woman's life and it all kicks off. But we find it statistically, you've just got to keep rolling it and pushing it and going for it. So you're taking people from comfortable to curious to convinced to a point of commitment. And then you've got the church. Now the church needs to function in such a way that will grip and excite a man by his faith. Because let me tell you something else about men. When a woman walks into a room, she immediately looks for the people that she can relate to. When a man walks in through a room, he's looking for the escape room. He's looking for the exit door straight away. He's planning his way out. Now if a church, this is true, if a church doesn't grip and excite a man, he'll find the exit door very, very quickly. So we've got to be doing the right things that grip and energise him, which I'm going to briefly shoot through in a minute. But at the very least, before we even think about culture of church, we need to be doing things like prayer triplets. You know, meeting with 2 or 3 other guys. You know, every Tuesday morning I meet with a few guys. I'm committed to it. Unless I'm travelling, I'll bend over backwards to be there at 7 o'clock with these guys and we'll read a bit of the Bible together and we'll pray for each other. And I've got a couple of mates who I know when I stay in hotel rooms as I am this week, they'll phone me up and ask me how I'm doing. Now, they'll stand with me in my ministry, and I stand with them in their work, in their particular functions, because they're my brothers, and we pray for each other. That is so important. Men's Bible studies. Well, as I said, we're producing stuff at the moment we can churn out to you just to see, show men that the Bible has practical things to say about their lives. One-on-one mentoring. If you've been walking with the Lord for a time, get hold of someone who's younger than you in faith, not necessarily years, but in faith, and walk with them and keep hold of them. Because if a man hasn't got that, he'll walk out the back door. He needs a brother who's with him. I walked out of church for a year because no one looked out for me, actually. Now, it's my responsibility I walked out. But it would have helped if someone had said, you know, Kyle, actually, I'm in banking and I've been told to lie by my boss and this is how I dealt with it. Because faith just became irrelevant to me in my early walk. So I couldn't see how it connected with my life. I needed a mentor figure around me. So, for me, I'm going to briefly tap into a presentation that can take me about 90 minutes normally, but I'm going to whiz through some stuff, okay? Just to reinforce what I've already said. Church for me is about putting the right tools in the hands of guys, not the wrong tools, and giving them what they need to survive a life of faith and discipleship, because we're not into winning converts. Jesus made disciples. We need to win men and keep them in for the long haul. That's what it's all about. So just think about what I've said about male culture, just to reinforce these points. Men are doers and not receivers. They want to do stuff. Church can be a very passive environment. We'll show you that in a minute. They place their worth in work. I'm not saying whether this is right or wrong. I'm just saying this is what happens. Often the first thing we'll talk about is what we do for a living. We place a huge amount of worth in our work. We're non-verbal. The verbal reasoning portion of our brain for a man is much smaller than that of a woman's. That's a medical fact. We just do not engage in talk in the same way. And it's not just words either, it's spoken words. That's written words and all kinds of stuff. You know, if you come into a church and you're given a big printed sheet and there's lots of words up on there and you make small talk before and small talk afterwards, for a man that is just dizzying. That's really tricky for a guy. Men forge bonds in adversity. You know, I'm not glorifying war here, but when men come out of war, they form a bond that is often very, very special and unique because they've struggled and strived for something. You look at the way men will hug each other after a World Cup rugby match. You know, the players on the field, there'll be bonds there that they'll remember for the rest of their lives. When you've got through something difficult in work, you've got through a difficult patch, or you've all faced redundancy together, or you've solved a big budget problem, that's when you really bond with people. That's how men forge very strong relationships. Men take time to trust. They won't automatically open themselves up, which is why you need this long-term approach to evangelism and mission when it comes to men. Because it takes a long time for a guy to let their guard down, unless there's a sovereign move of God. Men appreciate opinions being cast. Let me explain what I mean. If the teaching from the front is being very generic, now the Bible might say this, but also some people have that opinion, and so a man will be sitting there saying, "Will you just tell me what you think? Actually, I just want to know what you think." And do you know what they say? The fastest growing churches, the churches that are growing fastest with men, are actually the churches where they have very strong leadership. Where, you know, the leader's accessible and you can disagree with him, but he's got an opinion. You mustn't be frightened of that in our church culture. Men are objective, not subjective. Thinking about, and remember, I'm cutting out a lot of another presentation, so I'm just trying to think on my feet here of how to draw a lot of stuff together. But when it comes to, for instance, our worship life, there is a proliferation of songs over recent years that talk about our feelings. How I feel, Jesus is my lover, and I feel so good about that, and everything's wonderful. Now, that has its place, but for many men, that's a big turn-off. That's a huge no-no, because men respond to objective truth. So a song like, for instance, I'm not advocating just old hymns here, but a song like Before the Throne of God Above, I had a strong and perfect plea, a great high priest whose name is love, who ever lived and died for me. That's a song of truth. That will stir a man's heart. Why do you think a man rolls up in tears when he's declaring truth about his football team or his rugby team? He exhibits the same in church when he declares truth about God. But if you try and tell him what his feelings are, he'll switch off. So we find these things in church. I'm going to have to read through very quickly for you. Men wear masks. I find it very hard to let their guard down. This church hasn't created an environment for them where they can legitimately do that and express that in a masculine way. Spirituality is often judged by a feminine standard. Again, to explain, I come from a tradition of churches that are quite charismatic. By that I mean use of spiritual gifts in services, and people would often be very expressive in their worship. People would raise their hands and so on. I once had a woman come to me and say, I'm very concerned about my husband because I just don't think he's going on with God. And I said, well, why is that? And do you think you should be here with your husband? You know? And she said, well, basically he's not very demonstrative in worship. So I asked them both to come over, and I thought, I sniffed something here going on. So I sat down with them. This guy was a policeman. He was leading a crime task force in a very difficult part of London. And he said to me, do you know what, Carl? He said, from the minute I start my patrol, I'm praying under my breath all the time. He said, I'm leaping on villains, and while I'm handcuffing them, I'm praying for them. He said, I'm always on the go with God. He said, I'm just finding this really upsetting, this kind of stuff going on. And his wife said, but you're like a tombstone in worship. You're not expressing yourself. And what was basically happening was, his wife was judging his spirituality by a feminine standard. Because women can be very expressive, outwardly. Men might not be, but it doesn't mean to say they're not spiritual. But the church has made a mistake of judging spirituality by a feminine standard. And that's just crept in somehow. Church can be a very feminine environment. I'm not having a go at flowers in church at all. But actually, the whole environment in which we can be can actually be quite feminine. Lots of children's pictures up, banners, flowers, stuff like that. It actually speaks of something more feminine than masculine. Let me tell you how this has an effect. For instance, I do a lot of church planting consultancy. And a lot of church plants, when they take over a school hall, they will use the infant kids' chairs. And what you often find is that they can't take the service too seriously. There's almost like an infant spirituality which develops. It's just something practical that happens. So we have to say, ditch your little chairs, get some proper grown-up ones. You know, buy them, it's worth it. Now, the same thing can happen in church when it comes to feminine, masculine. If the environment is quite feminine and passive, that completely bypasses where a man is at. I'm having to go fast with some of these things. The relevance of teaching, we might teach, you know, how do I give more, pray more, be filled with the Holy Spirit, etc., etc. But a man might be sitting there thinking, but I'm facing redundancy on Wednesday. So what's the Bible got to say to me about that? Now I'm getting stuck in traffic jams half my life. What do you got to say about that? Don't keep telling me how I can pray harder. How do I live out my faith? Lack of accountability was spoken about in terms of prayer triplets. Worthy tasks. Why is it we can have men in church who could be brilliantly skilled mechanics, craftsmen, accountants, but their only job might be changing an overhead on the overhead projector or being a steward at the door greeting people and shaking their hands? Why can't we give them a job to do and a task? And why can't that be their act of worship? This is a thought. What about competition, risk and adventure? Why is it that pictures like that I can pull off numerous Christian websites or the covers of books? Why is it we like pictures of mountains and people surfing or skydiving when it comes to Christian posters? And then think about what church is like. Now, men respond to big vision and risk and adventure. Is maleness sinful? Numerous articles came out recently in some of the Christian press saying that competition, risk and adventure are sinful elements of the male character. Well, I think if we start to suggest that, then we're going to lose even more men. So I'm going to buzz through this now, I'm going to finish. You've been very patient with me. Just a couple of highlights on this one. I just want to quickly suggest to you that a male church is the most effectively unisex church. A church which gears itself up for men will please women. It will be very attractive to women, actually, and will be very attractive to men. But a church which is quite feminine will be only attractive to some women, will drive most men out. You can challenge that on me later. We would suggest to you that you don't just want sermons, monologue all the time, but dialogue. Because you think about how men like to relate. They like to argue and debate in the pub over a pint. They don't like to be told all the time. They like to be able to feedback. Big vision, we talked about a little bit. Risk and challenge, a big challenge in life. Movement evangelism, that's very important. For too many years, we talked about mission evangelism in terms of You know, if you come to Jesus, he'll sort your depression out. If you come to Jesus, you know, he'll solve this financial crisis. If you come to Jesus, he'll bring healing into your body. It's all needs-based stuff. Actually, when we're talking with guys, you need to be saying, stop whinging about Beckenham. Come to Jesus and we can change Beckenham. That's a bit more empowering, isn't it? Oh, and by the way, you might heal your financial crisis as well. But actually, come to Jesus and we can change stuff. That's movement evangelism. That really taps into the male character. Oh, some of the guys are nodding at me now because that seems so much more exciting to you to come to Jesus and he'll stroke you. For me, Jesus is my master and commander. He's my leader, my captain, my general. And he does meet with me and I have intimate moments with my God. But he's also the man who leads me. And that to me is much more attractive to guys. Brotherhood, as we tapped into through the presentation, so important for blokes. So there's a few thoughts for you, just to finish with. Why is it you can be an accountant in Harlow and never get prayed for, but suddenly go on mission to Hyderabad and everyone prays for you? Why is it I was in a church the other day and two head teachers were both leaving the same church? One head teacher was going to lead a Christian school in Malaysia. They all prayed for him in the service. He was going to lead a Christian school in Malaysia. The other guy was going to work in another school in the city. And they didn't pray for him. So what's that about? As pastors, do we visit people in their workplace and break bread with them, share communion, bring the presence of God to where they're working? So important. First time I visited a bank manager in my church at work in London, he came down the escalators of his very large flash bank and he went pale. I said, what's going on? He said, it feels like God had just come into the foyer. And he wasn't talking about me. What it meant was he made a connection suddenly between his work and his faith that he lived on a Sunday. We need to start bridging the gap. Mass ordination. If a bloke gets a new job, pray for him. If a young man gets his first job, bring it out the front and ordain him. Say, this is your place of mission. We're with you in it. Celebrate promotions. Celebrate redundancies. God's opened up a new chapter for you. We ordain you into this season of your life. Start making connections with your men around. So important. I haven't got time to talk about that. Typical men's ministry, pushing a boulder up a hill. If you stop pushing it, it'll come back on top of you and squash you. So you've just got to keep going, okay? I've chucked loads of stuff out at you, and you've been really patient. There's so much more I could say. I've tried to blend two different presentations, so I kind of hope that's worked for you. But the bottom line is that we're hopefully you can pick up very passionate about this. And so we're just here to serve and help you in any way possible, really, to start turning the tide of this incredible decline of men in the church. Any questions?